Okay, so the topic for the series in general, as that Reich Schertiner started with last week, is the question of how halacha deals with modernity, specifically new halachic issues that didn't really arise either ever, or at least in a significant way for the last 1,500 years. And one of those questions, Reich Schertiner, I know last week dealt with, I don't know what you want to call it exactly, technological advances or archaeological advances, the question of Tchilet. But I want to move from that realm to the realm of politics. And we've touched on some of these issues before. But specifically, the problem of minority rights. Jews, for most of history, or at least for most of the last 1,500 years or so, were minorities, right? We didn't have to talk about rights for minorities. We were minorities. We lobbied for our rights. If we lived in benevolent Muslim countries, then we were lucky enough to be granted the status of dhimmi, as recognized minorities. If we were less lucky, whether it be in Muslim lands or in Christian lands, then we were not respected minorities, to say the least. But we very rarely were in a situation where we were the majority, and therefore we had to grant rights to others. And that all changed in 1948. When we got a state, for the first time, we had to ask the question, we don't even had to bother asking this question. I mean, there are all types of halachot on the book that might make it difficult for a non-Jew living in a Jewish state, but, you know, that was a dream. It was a dream to even have the question of what would happen if we were a majority and we had to figure out how to treat those who were vulnerable to us. That just didn't happen. So then, suddenly, 1948, everything changes. We're living in a Jewish state, a primarily Jewish state, and now there are minorities. Now, whether they be Muslim or they be Christian, right? Whether they be religious minorities, whether they be ethnic minorities, right? However we want to define it, the majority of Jews, the majority of Israel were Jewish. The majority of Israel, at least the powerful class for a while, were also specifically European. And suddenly we're dealing with minorities. So what do? Right? How does halacha deal with minorities? Now, this is also sort of a hard question to ask because there's really two sides to this question. We'll deal with one, which is the question of how do we deal with minorities when we are the majority? But there's the second question, which is, we have to recognize it's not like all Jews have suddenly moved to Israel and now we're all majority and we're dealing with minorities. Like for us right now, dealing with this question, we are a minority where we really, really think it's important that minority rights be respected. So part of the problem is that, you know, it's hard to have it both ways. If we were to come out that minorities in Israel are not granted full rights, what would we do if, you know, let's say theoretically, you know, Canada would decide, well, we're not going to treat you terribly, but we're not giving you the same rights as everybody else because, you know, that's fair game. We're deciding we're going back to being, I guess, I don't know if Canada ever was, but okay, because it was only became its own country, whatever. But like England, we are going to go back to being officially Christian. I think it still is. England's still officially Christian, right? I think so. Anglican, whatever. Right, what we wouldn't be very happy. So we have to sort of keep that in mind. Does that affect how we think about things? Is it just an inconvenient fact? What do we do? So, if I asked, well, what types of questions would be test cases? We're not going to obviously deal with all of them. What types of questions would be test cases to how do we deal with minorities? Right? What types of questions could we ask? If you think about all the heated political questions nowadays, what questions could you ask?
Well, one thing that kind of you indirectly brought up just now is funding for private schools.
That was like, right? That's like, you know, 3-4 steps down. Let's get even more basic. We'll get to that in a minute. Even more basic. Are they allowed in? Period, right? Before we even get to property rights, can they live in the country? Or do we say, there's no such thing as a minority. There is, right? There is a majority, and that majority is also the only people that are allowed in the country. Then we can ask a secondary question. Okay, even if they're allowed in the country, do they have property rights, right? Can they buy houses? Can they rent houses, right? Do we encourage that? Do we discourage it? Do we allow it begrudgingly? etc., right? We could ask about employment. We could ask about funding, right? Now, funding is, you know, several steps beyond this, because you could always solve that by being a good libertarian, right? And say, well, we won't fund anything. Forget it. We're not going to fund anything, and then we have no problem. But you're right. Funding is a question which is several steps down the road. We already touched on one topic, which I'll summarize later on, which is religious tolerance. Do we allow the free expression of religion, which was a topic we discussed a few weeks ago, so I'm only going to summarize the conclusions that we saw there. Voting, right? Do we allow them to vote? Do we allow them to live among us? But we give, right? In theory, you could imagine that we give them, permanent residence status, or, give them a green card in what we, in what we call in the U.S. a green card. But we don't give them voting rights. You can treat them as equals, minus voting, or minus the ability to hold office, which is, basically, if I wanted to, that would basically be my status in Canada, right? Because I'm American, right? I can't vote, although apparently I can vote in the conservative primaries. I have no idea how that happens, but apparently I can do that. But I can't vote for office, right? I can't run for office. I can't do any of that because I'm not a citizen. Do we deny citizenship to minorities and grant them, permanent residence or whatever you call it? Okay, so those are some of the types of questions that we can ask, and there are many others that would test this issue. But let's start with the most basic question. The most basic question, I think, would be, do we allow them in, right? And you look at the Psukim, it doesn't look so good, right? You start at the beginning, Shemot, Perikov, Gimel, when Hashem is describing, time one, what's going to happen when we go to Israel. Remember, Shemot, Perek, Chav Gimel describes what would have happened if there was no Egel, right? If you think about what could have happened, the entire Torah could have gone from Bereishit Perek Chav Gimel to Yoshua Perek Aleph with Moshe as the leader, right? There was no break in between. It didn't happen. But this is the description of what would have happened. Okay, so Ki Yelech Malachi Lefanecha Ve'Aviachai La'Mari Ve'Achiti Ve'Aprizi Ve'Akinani Achiv Ve'Aviusi Ve'Achativ. I'm going to bring you into their land. I'm going to destroy them. So, don't bow to their idols. Don't worship them. Destroy them. Break their altars. And don't make any treaties with them. There's no way out. Go in, destroy, it's over. Lo yeshvu b'artzicha, and they can't live in the land. Pen yachatiu oschal li kisavodes Elohim ki elochal mokesh, because they're going to lead you to worship other idols, and they're going to be a snare for you. So, you read the psukim, and the answer, if you just read the pasuk, would be there's no such thing as minority rights. There are no minorities basically living in the country, or as we'll see, maybe not fully, but idolaters, right, are out, right. They don't live there. They can't have property. They can't have religious worship. They can't have anything, right? They're out. They're either dead or exiled, right? In number two, Unisanam Adonai Elohecho lefanecha vikisem hacharem dacharimem osam dacharim osam lo sichros lem bris v'lo sichonem lo tischatein bam v'lo sitein livno uvito lo sikach livincha, right? When God gives you the land, strike them down. Like, destroy them, don't make a covenant, don't give them grace, right? Don't have mercy, whatever that means, right? Don't marry with them. And the Psukim give us a very hard line approach. They're out, that's it, that's all there is to it. The Gemara, commenting on those words, Vilo Sichanim, what does Lo Sichanim mean? So the Gemara says in three, it means several things. Ein Mochrin Lohem B'Mechuber L'Karka. You can't sell them land, right? If it is attached to the ground. But you can sell them trees. You can even sell them trees on condition they'll cut them down. How do we know? Because the pasuk says, Lo Sichanim, and what does Lo Sichanim mean? The Gemara then quotes a drasha and then proves it from a braisa. It means three things. You can't allow them to have a hold on the land. You can't give them grace. You can't give them gifts for no reason. The next Mishnah says, "Ein maskirin lehem batim erchol." Not only can you not sell them land, you can't rent them land. The ein sarach lomar sados, and for sure you can't give them fields. Of Suria maskirin lehem batim velo sados in Suria, which is only a rabbinic extension of Eretz Yisrael, so you can rent them land, but you can't sell, but not fields. Uvechutz laaretz mocher lehem batim maskirin sados, and in outside in the diaspora, you can sell them houses. You can rent them fields. Divrei Rav Meir, Biyosi Omer. Biyosi says, no, Eretz Yisrael, maskir lehem batim velo sados. In Eretz Yisrael, you can rent them houses, but not fields. V'suria mochren batim umaskirin sados. In Syria, you can sell them houses and rent them fields. V'chutzlars mochren elu va'elu. And in chutzlars, you can even sell both. And af b'makrum shamru lahaskir. But even when we say that you can rent them property, lola beis dir amri, you can't let them live there. Mivnei shu machnes lesoch avos kochavim. Even in chutz laaretz, you can't rent them property. Shnei amar lo soviso eval leisecha, because you can't bring abominations, meaning idols, into your house. And if you're renting it, so you still own it, and therefore they're bringing idols into your property. V'chomakam lo yaskir lo asamer chatz mivnei shu nekra shema, and you can never give them a bathhouse. Okay. So, if you just look at the psukim and the gemara, things look bad. The psukim imply that you aren't allowed to let them live in the country. And then the gemara sort of doesn't talk directly about that point, about them living there, but says, but okay, you also can't sell them land, and you can't even rent them land in Eretz Israel. So they can't be there, they can't buy land, they can't rent land. Or that's the simple read of the psukim and the Gemara, and this obviously creates a problem. So maybe we'll say, okay, we don't paskin like this. Well, we sort of do. If you look at number four, for example, the Rambam summarizes it very succinctly. Ein mochrim lehem batim v'sados b'eretz Yisrael, etc. He quotes that whole halacha in halacha gimel. In halacha dalet, afim makom she'etiru lehaskir lo lebeis tira hetiru b'neishim machnes l'socha v'zuchavim v'nemar lo saviso el beisecha. Even where you're allowed to rent, meaning chutz laaretz, you can't rent them to live there because they'll bring in idols. Aval maskir lehem batim lasas and otzar, but you can give them storage houses. Umipnei mochrim lehem, why can't you sell? He quotes the Gemara, shenemar v'lo sechaneim, lo tidin lohem chanaya bekarka. She'im lo yilehem karaka yeshivas and yeshivas arayhi, because if they don't have land, then they're dwelling in Eretz Yisrael to whatever extent it is. It will only be temporary. And then he summarized the other halachos. V'chein aser l'saper b'shivchan, you can't praise them. V'afil lomer kamenah ovikochavim zelat zuraso, you can't even say how beautiful is this idolater. For sure you can't praise him, you can't make his words beloved. Why can't you do these things? Because it leads you to cling to him. However, we temper it just mildly. If you look at halacha hey, that mefarnes imani ovdi kocham imani yisrael menei darkei shalom, we do support their poor people when we're supporting Jews, because for the purposes of peace. And then halacha vav, he writes, and ein kol hadvarim ha'elu amurim el bizman shegalu Yisrael v'ein ovdiu kochavim o'shayat akum takeif al Yisrael aval bizman shayat Yisrael takeif alayhem. But this halacha mafarnas in ani akum is when we're in galus, when we're under the control of the non-Jews. But when we're in power, asher lanu laniach ovdei kochavim beinenu, they can't be among us, period. End of story. Vafilu yoshev yeshiva sarai, even if they're just here temporarily, over makom lamakom bischara, even if they're just passing through for business, lo yavar ba'aretzenu, they can't even go through the land, elachi yikabal lov shiva mitzvah, shenitzavu b'nei noach, until they accept the seven Noahide laws. Shenemar, and he quotes a pasuk, lo yeshvu ba'artzecha afil lefisha, they can't dwell in your land even for a moment. V'im kibal av sheva mitzvos harizya ger toshav, and if he did accept the seven Noahid laws, so then he's a ger toshav. V'ein mekablon ger toshav elu bizman sheyovel noeg, but there's a problem, because we don't accept a ger toshav unless the yovel is noeg. The yovel is only noeg and rov klal Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael, which is now not the case. Avos shelo bizman hayovel, when there is no yovel, ein mekablon elu ger tzedek belvad, we can allow converts, but we can't allow ger toshav, which is a permanent resident. So if you just took the Rambam, what comes out is follows. There is such a thing as a permanent resident. Who is a permanent resident in Israel? A ger toshav. However, is it possible to give someone the status of permanent resident? No, because there's no yovel. So there's a theoretical status which would allow people permanent residency. Let's call it that, right? Which is a ger toshav, right? But we can't give that status bisman hazeh. And if someone isn't willing to accept the sheva mitzvos, meaning he's an idolater, so then, too bad, right? You can't travel through, you can't be there, not temporary, you can't, right? Forget giving you land. Wait, you can't be in the country, period. So you just take the Rambam's hard line, and what are the minority rights that are granted in Israel? Seemingly, absolutely not. Right, there are no rights to minorities. Right, that's what is, right? And this was the problem that Poskim had to deal with, was that is not going to fly in modern Israel, but you take a straight read, a simple read of just the Psukim, the Gemara and the Rambam, and that's what you get. So, what ways could Poskim deal with this problem? Right, assuming, well, right, theoretically, let's call it a problem. Maybe it's not a problem. That's part of the issue, right? What ways could the Poskim deal with this? So, let's lay out the range, right? On the one extreme, you could take the Gemara, the Rambam, Kipshutam, and then say, Inochanami, right? And we saw this in the context, maybe now is a good time, well, you know, I'll summarize it later, because we'll see the parallels to the religious question in a moment, right? The religious tolerance question in a moment. At one extreme, you could just say, yeah, we take the sources as they are, and a halachic state would not recognize minority rights. That's all there is to it. End of story. There's nothing to talk about. If you didn't want to say that, what could you do? What options do we have? Yeah, Pesach. Right. So one thing is to clarify. The Rambam already hints at this, that there's a difference between status cases when Yata Kefa and Ein Yata Kefa. Do we have power or do we not have power? Now, we're assuming that in modern Israel we have power. But as we saw, Rav Herzog said in the context of religious tolerance, he's going to say the exact same thing here. In fact, it's the same article, right? Several poskim, Rav Herzog and Rav Israeli, as we'll see in a moment, go in the direction and say, look, that's all theoretically true if you have the ability to do that, but we don't. Why don't we?
Hashem doesn't want it.
Well, hold that thought for a moment. That was Rav Henkin said religious tolerance. But what did Rav Herzog say in religious tolerance? Exactly. He said, look, we got the state because the UN gave it to us. What is going to happen, right? I mean, look what happens now. We grant full rights. We do everything. And look at the, right? You have the Paris summit. Right, today, it's not like, right, it's not like the, if we actually were involved in things which are clear violations of the Universal Code of Human Rights and the Geneva Conventions, like, not like questionable things, right? Like, okay, they're all arguing about settlements. They wouldn't have to talk about settlements and whether it's a violation of international law, it's not a violation of international law, if any non-Jew who walked in the country, we either threw them out or killed them. There would be, settlement would not be a discussion. We would be so far in the dark ages, right? They would write us off as, you know, as barbarians, right? Meaning, it would look like we're doing the same as Assad, right? I mean, that's basically what would come out, right? I mean, okay, we wouldn't let them come in, so we wouldn't have to kill them. I mean, I don't know how much better this would be in the eyes of the world. So Rav Herzog just says, look, halachic discussions, be they as they may, that's only Yad Tekeifa. I don't even have to enter into this discussion. That's what I would call a very bidyevet answer, right? Which is, really we should, but, right, you could just give a bidyevet answer, which is, we should, but we can't. What's a way of going in the direction of lechatchila? Right, is to, the Rambam himself says there is such a status as a permanent resident who we allow and encourage to be in the country, called a ger toshav. The Rambam seems to think that ger toshav doesn't apply bisman hazeh, but we don't necessarily have to paskin like the Rambam, right? Or we can interpret the Rambam differently. So if you look, for example, the Ravid right here does exactly that. The Ravid says, "Vafilu yoshiv yeshivas araya over makom makom bischara lo yaver bar tzeinu." Says Amar Avram, "Zos lo matzana velo shamano me'olam." I never heard this. I don't know what you're talking about. Ha'pasuk she'emevi b'shiva umasu. Who is not allowed to live in the land? You think it's all non-Jews? What are you talking about? It's the seven idolatrous nations we had to kick out. But After that, whoever wants to live in the country is allowed to live in the country. And besides, I don't even get where he got this notion they can't travel through. The Rambam is extending things beyond the Gemara, beyond the Psukim. And then he says, Aval shelo bizman hayovel mekablin al getzedek bilvad. And on the second point that the Rambam says that we don't accept getzedek bizman hazeh, Amar Avram, ain't even mashvel b'shivas haras. They just don't agree. Right? Even if we don't have the formal acceptance of Gertoshev, the status of permanent resident doesn't need a Beis Din. There are certain aspects that Gertoshev, yes. According to Rashi, for example, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, for example, a full Gertoshev is chayv to keep Shabbos. Partial halachos, based on the Gemara and Kritzos Daf Tes. Fine. That doesn't exist without the Beis Din. But in terms of allowing them to live in the land, this giving them the status of permanent resident, the Ravid challenges them on two points. First of all, the limitations were only idolater, were only the seven nations. And second of all, we for these purposes, Ger Toshav applies to anybody who's not an idolater. What are you talking about? We don't need a formal acceptance. Now, the Rambam, we should admit, really would not agree with this. Because the Rambam, if you look in number five, has a very extreme position, which is, Ezui Gertoshav ze akum shekibulav shalo yavod kochavim ozalos im shar hamitzos shenitztavu b'nei noach v'lo l'mol v'lo taval ha-reza mekablon oso v'hu mi-chasidei umas ha-olam v'lo manikra shemotota shoshav shemishamutar lo shiva b'neinu b'eretzitro k'moshe marinu v'lechos akum. Right, so first he says, who's a Gertoshav? It's someone who accepted not to worship Avodah Zarah. And he's a ger toshav because he's allowed to be a toshav. He's allowed to be a resident. Ve'ein mekablin ger toshav ele b'zman shayovel noheg. Avol b'zman azavil kibol av kol atar kulo chutz mituk echad ein mekablin oso. Okay. I might have actually cut out this part of the Rambam, did I? Or did I just move it? Oh, no, sorry. Here, if you want to skip to it. I put it on 8. The Rambam is in extreme position number 8. Kol mekavol sheva mitzvos v'nizr la sozna reizim echasidei oza olam. If you keep the sheva mitzvos and you are careful to keep them, you are one of the righteous of the nations. V'yeshul chelok olam haba, and you have a portion of the world to come. V'hu shekibol ozan v'yasa ozan v'pnei shetzivo v'hena kodesh baruch hu batorah. But only if you keep the sheva mitzvos because Hashem told Moshe in the Torah. So the Rambam has a unique position that to be a ger toshav, right, exactly. Yeah, essentially, mitzvah shrichas kavana. It's not just enough to be a good moral person. You could be, right, you could not worship Avodah Zarah, but short of being like my calculus teacher in high school. I had a calculus teacher in high school who called himself the Torah Goy, right? He'd been in Rambam for years. He'd become convinced that Judaism was true, but he used to say, I don't become Jewish because, let's be honest, I'm a hedonist and God never commanded me to be Jewish. It's too hard, but I believe that God gave the Torah to Moshe, and I believe the Torah is true, and I believe I'm not obligated in it. So, short of that guy, right, and the few Gerei Toshav that exist, right, and there are such people. There's a church in Texas who has a posek, right? There's a few churches. You can go online. They have a Wiki Noah. You can go online. Wiki Noah with Piske Halacha and articles. They link to every article by Rabbi Bleich and Rabbi Broid on the Shemitz Bei Noach. There are people out there like this. They're Gerei Toshav. But the Rambam would say no. A Gerei Toshav is someone who accepts the Torah is true. He just doesn't think he's obligated. Okay. But like I said, Halacha L'maisa, Poskim can just say that's very nice.
So what's the distinction?
Well, that not only do you accept the Sheva Mitzvos, you have to accept the Sheva Mitzvos because God commanded them to Moshe, meaning you can't just be.
Those people do also.
Oh, they do.
So they don't say that they're applicable to them because they're not.
Correct,
Jewish.
And they're right.
That's just their status.
So that's it. I'm saying that's a Ger Toshav. That guy, if he went to Beis Din, he would be a full Ger Toshav, right? But most people in Israel, that doesn't apply to, right? Even people who are not idolatrous, naniach, right? That doesn't apply. They're not quite. So the Rambam is going to be very hard to find a lichadchila, quote-unquote, defense. The Rambam, you could still say, look, we don't have enough power, but it's going to be very hard to say lichadchila, according to the Rambam, that
plus
we should have minority rights. What?
Plus, there's no Yovel anyway.
Well, there's no Yovel, and the Rambam is very, very machbid on this. But the Rambam isn't the only posek. As we saw, the Ravid disagrees on two points. First of all, he thinks the Iker Isser of living in Eretz Yisrael applies to idolaters. And two, he thinks for the purposes of being a permanent resident, being or whatever, of living in Israel, it doesn't matter whether you have formal acceptance, right? You just need to be right? Someone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvot, which, for the most part, is pretty easy for most of the minorities in Israel, right? If you're talking about Muslims, so, you know, the Avodah Zarah isn't a problem, right? That's clear. So they're, according to the Ravid, right, assuming they're not actually, right, assuming they're law-abiding Muslims, so then they are, according to the Ravid, for these purposes, Ger Toshav, L'chadchila, they're allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael, L'chadchila, Mefarnes in Eyakum, right? By redefining who's allowed to live there, we've moved now into the realm of L'chadchila. Right?
What Israel's doing now, that in Jerusalem, these seven districts are Arab only, and it's big signs, no Jews, no Israel, Israelis are allowed to pass the seven neighborhoods. Is that the right way?
Well, this is part, I mean, for security, sometimes that's necessary. Whether that's, you know, whether that's a lichatchila state is, you know, part of this discussion. But let's continue in the sources and we'll see. Okay, so the first direction that the poskim took was to do exactly what I just said, which was to note that the Rambam may give us trouble, but he's not the majority view. The Ravid argues, and if you look at 6, so does the Kesef Mishnah. Right, the Kesef Mishnah says, "Time will shall arrive at Lomar Shavu b'shein mekablan gertosha b'zman hazeh she'ena yovel noeg im kibo sheva mitzvahs lama yimne ozo b'shivas aret halek lamechash be'pen yachdiu." Kesef Mishnah says something very simple. The only reason you can't have non-Jews, according to the Psukim, you can't have Ovdei Kochavim live in Eretz Yisrael is because they might lead you astray to idolatry. That's why the Ravid says, for these purposes, all that matters is he's not an idolater. He keeps the Sheva Mitzvot. There's no formal acceptance necessary. Uladas Rabbeinu Nira Lomar Dinochamami Shemeatro Kibol of Sheva Mitzvot Shein Monos of Mishivas Arts. And I think the Rambam would agree. He's only saying that Bezdin won't accept him Bizman. There's certain, you know, implications, but Yeshivas Arts, he would agree with the Ravid. So, the right now, I don't know if that diok is miduyok in the Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah thinks that for these purposes, the Rambam agrees with the Ravid, that as long as someone keeps the Sheva Mitzvot, he can live in Eretz Yisrael. And even if the Rambam doesn't, the Ravid agrees with it. And the Kesef Mishnah, who is also Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore an important posek as things go, agrees with the Ravid. So Rav Herzog just says in 7, in his article, Zchuyot HaMiyutim Lefi Halacha, he says, look, aval kol panim, bein shudas harambam emes kach o einenu kach. I don't know whether Rambam said it or not, but whether he said it or not, harei lanu shnei amudei hatorah halalu, haraivid, umoran shulchan aruch zal, maskimim le'acha shenachrish in Ovid, avod zara, avu b'shal kibol b'fnei bezden, shal Yisrael, ein lemno amimeno, yeshiva bar, b'eret Yisrael. Chutz mizeh kvar kriya kod mizal, sh'uma shlema shikibol av sheva mitzvos, gam b'zman hazeh yishlem din gerim toshavim. So he said, first he quotes the Rav in the Kesef Mishnah, and then he adds a third, another svara from Rav Kook. Rav Kook said that even the Rambam would be moed that if you had a whole nation, a whole ethnicity, which is built on keeping the Sheva Mitzvos, so they would be Ger Toshav. And therefore, he argues, at least with Muslims, right, they are not idolaters. The religion, the whole ethnic group is not idolatrous. Okay? Admittedly, there are other mitzvos, but that's usually the one that people are most worried about. Yeah. I mean, they would get killed, right?
So how do they deal with the whole issue talking about Yisrael when half the country was
Pragmatic, right? I mean, when the kings are worshiping Avodah Zarah, you're not going to convince them, you know, to get them out. But you actually, Rav Herzog sort of addresses that in a moment. I mean, the answer is it was wrong, right? Obviously, that. Look, it's like there, like what was in the 1980s, the Reconstructionist movement at some point wanted to bring back feminist aspects of Judaism. Right, this is one of the all-time fails in Jewish history. So they said, we were looking for history of feminist worship, and then we said, well, we found in the Bible, in the prophets, that there was a strong custom of worshiping this female goddess, Asherah. So someone tried to suggest you should bring back Asherah worship. It's true, it was a Jewish practice. It was a strong-held Jewish practice. That doesn't mean you bring back Asherah worship. It happens, you know, okay. So the fact that they were worshiping idols, the Tanakh is full of terrible things. There were horrible minhagim. I mean, nechanami. Yes, whatever. It's one of these bizarre historical facts that exists. Fine. If you look at 9 in the Amud HaMini, this is Rav Shaul Yisraeli. He writes about Haroz L'Mishpat Kohen, Meiz Beno Yedidi Hagon, etc. Right? Hagon Hatzadik Tzvi Yehuda Kuk, Shlita. Right? So Rav Tzvi Yehuda quotes, he said, Shenaka B'das Arayvid. He just quotes that was the position of Kuk, She'inlin Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael Masbe Kabbalin Yen Avod Zarah. Matzinu Madrega Mimutzad Bein Achri L'Ger Toshav. And he says, why? Because I have this middle status. There's a status between non-Jew and full Ger Toshav V'hulim via Mizbar Alpidas Arayvid, but Zeshekibos L'Olavad Avod Zarah Shehu Kid Ger Toshav L'Inyan Yeshiva Aretz. He's a middle status. He's called a Ger Toshav for the purpose of living in the land. Now, admittedly, this only gets us to himatsut ba'aretz, right? To allowing them to be in the land, right? Because that's the context of this issue. But then we move to issue two, which is, okay, even if they can live there, even if we've managed to come, even with the lechatchila way of saying they're allowed to live there, because they're basically somewhat gerei toshav, are you allowed, right? If they're not full Gerei Toshav, are you allowed to then go the next step and sell them land or rent them land? And that is a little bit more complicated. While the Beis Yosef said they're allowed in the country, when it came to giving them Chanaya Bakarga, number 10, he writes, Mashakaz Rabbeinu Asr Litin Mat Noschinim Lovid Avod Zara, Lav Lafuki Yishme'ilim. It doesn't exclude Muslims. El Lafuki Ger Toshav, only a full Ger Toshav is allowed to buy land. Dehainu shekibel of sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. V'zeu shanu mitzuvim lachiyoso v'al shar goyim kulam dinechad lahem. So the Beis Yosef, while he allowed Muslims to live in the land, he doesn't allow you to sell land to them, which, again, isn't so helpful. However, Tosvos says no. Stama de milsa mayri, this is number 11. Stama de milsa mayri b'chulu of the chochovim v'chein mash b'sugin b'samuch. V'kasha dehailo sechonein b'sheva umos davkoksiv. The Tosfos says no. Even the issue of selling land only applied to idolaters, right? To the sheva umos and to idolaters. But if they're not idolaters, they're even not full gerei toshav. They're just these de facto, right, gerei toshav that we talked about. So then you're allowed to sell them land too. And the Meiri goes farther. The famous position of the Meiri, that admittedly a shitas yachid, but it's oft quoted, primarily because it's so striking and because he says it 141 times or something like that in his Perush. Ha, kol shehu min ha'umos ha'gduros b'darkei ha'datot v'shemodot be'elohut ein safek sh'af v'she'ein makiro mutar v'ra'ui. All halachos in Shas that apply to idolaters apply to uncivilized idolaters, but anyone who is what he calls gidurim b'gidrei ha'datot, they are civilized and religious, they're not barbarians, then none of the halachot you find in Shas about non-Jews applies to them. And he goes very far with this. In Yoma Daf Pei Dalid, he goes as far as to say that we tend to think, if you ever hear a medical ethics here, how can you save a non-Jew on Shabbos? Because Mipnei Eva, Mipnei this, whatever, right? He just says no. Chalul of Shabbos Achad, Yishmor Shabbos Harbe, V'chai Bohem, all those things apply to non-Jews as long as they are Gedurim B'Gedar Hadatot. And he says, oh, maybe you'll tell me Christians are not Gedurim B'Gedar Hadatot. He says, no. When the Gemara talks about Notzrim, it doesn't mean Christians. It means a sect who worship the sun and claim descent from Nebuchadnezzar. But Christians are also Gedurim B'Gedar Hadatot. Okay. So Rav Herzog, therefore, in answering these two questions in 13, summarizes his position and adds another twist. And he says, look, I'll add something. Ha-mitzvot halalu, shein mitzvot tziburiyot, ha-mutalot al-kol yachid v'yachid, el al-guf ha-shalit, al-memshalah ayudit, bezit zirash dehei. He says, let me explain to you. All these halachot are not personal halachot. They're governmental halachot. Sha-koach b'yadol l'kaiman, because only a government can fulfill them. Therefore, lo hutlu lechatchila ella al ha'am ha'yehudi ha'koveish et ha'aretz v'agmekabel et ha'zuvaniyot me'atzmo. And therefore, it only applies to the government. Mibli lechashev imagoyim. Harei zeu rekat b'Torah shalotan mitzvot. He said that's the background in the Torah. U'pashtud ha'enyan me'idah latzma. Right? It's just obvious when you read the words. Im kain efo behedero shel reka zev tenai mitziyut gadot shemadina notena al menat kach. So he says, okay, we mentioned this before, but I'll summarize it outside because I didn't want to put it all here. Rav Herzog said, look, even the problems that are hard to solve, like selling them land, right, I have an easy solution, right, which is, even if you think it should be usur, that's only bi yadenu takefa. But yadenu is not takefa. How do we know? Because the UN gave us the land, and the UN partitioned it on condition, essentially, that we would follow the human, right, the code of universal human rights. If we didn't, we don't get the land. Which means that the government's hands are tied. Okay, but if Herzog says, very good, the government's hands are tied, but I can choose to rent to whoever I want or sell land to whoever I want. So how am I allowed to sell to an individual non-Jew? He says, no. The whole mitzvah was never a personal mitzvah to begin with. It was a governmental mitzvah. It was the responsibility of the melech to set the tone in the country. And if the melech or the malchus's hands are tied, then you are pater legamre. Because this was never a personal mitzvah to begin with. It was about the king or the government selling policy. If the government's hands are tied, then so are yours, and forget about it. If the government has to let you sell to non-Jews, then you're allowed to sell to non-Jews. We're in a bidyeved situation. Stop asking the question. And then, if you look at the next paragraph, he says, then he adds something very clever. He says, look, I'll add another svara. You know, I'll just say it outside. It's very long, but you can read it inside. He said, another svara. Why does the pasuk say you can't have Ov the Avodah Zarah live in Eretz Israel and can't give them land? Because it might lead you astray. He's like, what is the other alternative here? That's talking about what? Where most Jews live where? In Eretz Yisrael. Everyone lives in Eretz Yisrael. You allow some idolatrous forces into Eretz Yisrael. You're weakening your spiritual fortress. He's like, who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? What is the option? What's going to happen? We're going to turn it down. So that what are they going to do? We're not going to get a state. So we're going to go back to what we've been doing for 2,000 years. And where are we going to live? Everywhere else. It's better there? Like, I don't understand. If the whole point, the Torah said, don't allow idolaters into the land because they might lead you astray. This has, even a primarily Jewish state with minority idolaters is better than what we've been doing since Churban Habayit. I don't know what you want from my life. It says very simply, Bizman Hazeh, this is our best hope. With all the bidyeved that are attached to it, this is our hope. He said the only way we can change our position in this world is if we grant minority rights. And then right in the middle he says, Zil basar taima, go after the reason for the mitzvah. The reason the mitzvah is, don't lead us astray. It's better to get the state with all the limitations we're going to have than our only choice to be living in galus. I don't understand. I don't even get this. I don't even get this discussion. And then, and the next paragraph, he adds, besides, there's the physical danger element to this, which is, we're coming on the heels of the Holocaust. We need somewhere to go. It's not just a spiritual question. We need somewhere to go. This is a bidyeved situation, mikol abchinot. And therefore, as he said, I don't know if I put this line here or only last time. I think it was last time where he said, therefore, ein rav, im balmoach v'seichel yashar. Right? That was his line. There's no rabbi with a head on his shoulders who's going to tell you that you have to impose these laws and risk not having a state. I just do not get what you are talking about. Okay. So, if we take a step back, though, for a moment, and we ask not just what answers are given to defend it, but we ask, okay, what types of answers? So we actually have something interesting, okay? Because whenever we have a difficult situation that in modernity, where the classic halacha, applying it in, you know, in modern times, is going to be hard, so we have several options. One option is to take a hardline position. Now, no one really takes this hardline position on allowing non-Jews to live in the land, though we'll see in a moment they will in terms of selling them land. But that's a very hard position at the extreme. But even if you know where you have to get to, right, what we call psikat halacha b'sharat chak, you know the conclusion has to be, if you can find any way to do it, there are different ways to come to that conclusion. Sometimes you're going to be comfortable saying, look, there's a lichatchila, and I'm perfectly fine saying that in theory, this is what the Torah wants, but it's not the reality, and therefore, We just have to recognize that's not the reality, and fine. And be okay living a bidyeved life. Reb Herzog, for the most part, takes that direction across the board. He's totally okay. He doesn't really get into the question, what should the Jewish state look like? He just said, this is the reality that's been given to us. We need it. We need the state. The alternative is worse. So, allow them to live here. Allow them to buy land. Allow them to rent. I don't even need to really deal with the values question here. Right? I don't need to deal with the question with, as a modern person, are my sensibilities violated by the theoretical halakha? Like, I don't really care. Right? It's, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. All I need to do as a posseg is come to a practical conclusion that allows me to live. Right? That's all I need to do. Alternatively, you might not be comfortable with that. You might want to say, no, I actually, right, it would be uncomfortable for me to live in a situation where I would say, well, really, I should kick out all the non-Jews. But, you know, what can I do, right? Because, as I said, right now, we're not learning this year in Eretz Yisrael. We're learning it in Toronto. And we intuitively really value our rights, right, as minorities, right? We do, right? Not even just equal rights. We like the rights that are afforded to minorities, extra protection. We like that there's a category of crimes called hate crimes, right, where if we can prove something was aimed at someone because they're a minority group, they get even more, right, they get punished to an even more stringent extent. We like that. So for some people, it's really actually difficult to say, oh yeah, well, it's just, well, yeah, I mean, the Torah wouldn't grant rights to non-Jews, but whatever, that's okay. As long as I get my rights here, and we came up with a practical solution, I don't care that in an ideal Torah world, it would look nothing like the rights I get in Canada, right? But some people will say, no, that bothers me. So you see a hint here of a possible other direction, which is to say at least some of these halachot only apply either to the Sheva Amim, right? And that's really what the Ravid says, right? The Ravid, Tosfos, Meiri, say, no. It's lechatchila. Like, the ideal Jewish state will include non-Jews. That's totally fine, right? Not just Gerei Toshav. Anyone who is Gedurim B'Gedrei HaTatot, anyone who's not the Sheva Amim, there are certain categories of people that we don't want. Okay, every country has people they don't allow in its borders, right? That's true. But fundamentally, we're okay with a whole group having rights to buy land, to rent, to be basically equal citizens in the country. And that's the, right, so you see this struggle that some poskim are fully okay with living a bidyeved life, quote unquote, and other poskim say, no, I intuitively value minority rights, right? And here it's not even hard. Like the Ravid, Tosfos, Meiri already open you a direction to talk about it. Now, maybe it's worth it here making the point, I put it at the end, but I'll say it here. We had this discussion a few weeks ago with religious rights, right? Religious tolerance. We saw the exact same discussion. Right, the question of are you allowed to allow churches in Israel? Right, so we saw on the one hand you had whichever Hasidim it were that wrote to Rav Kasher after 67 and said, you see that the religious Zionists don't mean what they say; they're not really religious because when they conquered Yerushalayim, they didn't destroy the churches. You see, there are terrible people; they don't really care about Torah, and they take the hard line and say, what should you do when modernity conflicts with halacha? Forget about modernity, follow halacha to whatever conclusion that gets you. If that means destroying the churches, if that means kicking out the non-Jews, and that's what it means, and I don't care. You had a Herzog and Rav Kasher who said, look, that's not practical, we don't have to do that. I'm not going to embrace religious tolerance, I'm just going to say it's a reality now, and you just have to deal with it. And then you had Rav Henkin who said, no, if Bizman Hazeh, God orchestrated that we don't have the power to impose religious, right, religious uniformity, then God must have not wanted it. The Torah wants you to destroy Avodah Zarah. No, the Torah wants there to be no Avodah Zarah in the world. When Mashiach comes, everyone's going to understand the truth, and there will be no idolaters, because as Buria said, right, Itamu, right, or at least as she's quoted as saying, right, Itamu, right, Chatoim velo Chotim. Right, it's not totally clear. It's not actually what it says, but I'm not going to get into the grammatical issue of what's actually going on there. But the basic point is true, right? That let's get rid of sin and not sinners. And he said, God actually wanted you to tolerate people, right? He wanted it to be that you would tolerate them. So, Bizman HaMashiach, you won't have to have religious tolerance because everyone will recognize God. Bizman HaZeh, God wanted it that you could have minorities that you actually strongly disagreed with and even did wrong things. Well, you have the same phenomenon happening here. The same thing, if you remember last summer, right, you had with the question in the police forces, right? The question of, do we want goyim in the country l'chadchila such that a legitimate psak would be, there are certain things police will never be allowed to do on Shabbos, and you need always non-Jews as part of your police force. Is that okay or not? Some poskim said, no, l'chadchila, there shouldn't be non-Jews in the state. And therefore, we need a paskin as if there are no non-Jews in the state, and therefore we have to find a way halachically of allowing everything that needs to be done by Jews. And other poskim, like Rav Kook, said, what are you talking about? The ideal Jewish state will have non-Jews. And therefore, there's no problem in saying you'll have to have the non-Jew unit in the police force, and they'll be the ones who work on Shabbos and do certain things. That's totally fine. And over, you have this phenomenon where poskim argue, when they're dealing with this reality, where modern sensibilities and realities conflict with halacha, as it stated, some poskim are going to say, take the hard line. Some poskim are going to say, be pragmatic and don't ask the question, is this lechatchila or b'dyavad is not relevant? And some poskim are going to say, no. Maybe there's a way to actually make halacha work with the modern values.
Sort of like we have now, where we divide the territories of the area A, B, and C, where Basel, B,
I mean, right, this is all, you know, in the background of how poskim view this, trying to get into these specifics. As many times as I try to understand it, I only send half of it. But okay, I don't want to, you know, get into the nitty gritty of those questions. Okay. Now. Okay. In 14:15, I'll summarize 14:15 outside. As we noted before, in addition to the question of owning and renting land in Eretz Yisrael, rental has an added problem because even if it's mutter to sell to land or rent land because of lo sechanim, right? If someone's actually an idolater and you rent them land, not own land, the problem is that you now have a house with idols. So the Ramah says that nowadays the minhag in Chutz La'aretz is to rent property to non-Jews because they don't put idols in their house. Now the problem is, what happens if they do, right? Because so far everything we've said is only allowed someone who's not actually an idolater to rent land. You could ironically sell them but not rent, right? All this allows selling. Normally renting is not as bad because it's not permanent. But if they're an actual idolater and they bring in idols, so then renting is worse because now you have an idol in your home. And the Ramah says, well, the minhag is not to worry about it because people don't bring idols in their house. And that doesn't help if you know someone is bringing an idol to their house. The Shach, though, says no. The reason it's mutter bizman hazeh is because while halachically rental is not considered ownership, the minhag ha'olam is to view rentals as temporary ownership. And he said, therefore, when you rent out land, since the minhag ha'medina, the minhag ha'olam, is to treat rentals as ownership, he's worshiping idols in his own house, not in your house, so you don't have to worry about it. So there is that added problem, right? Which is there, if someone's actually bringing an idol in, you have to paskin like the Shach against the Ramah, right? Because otherwise, you have a problem. Okay, fine. But that's a sort of a minor point. Now, this all exploded to see how this really happens a few years ago when a group of rabbis came out and took the hard line, led by Rav Shmuel Eliyahu. So if you look at number 16, I gave you a summary, which was Yoter mi chamishim rabbanei arim itzarfu lepsak alacha shel Rava Yer Tzvat Shmuel Eliyahu hakoveh ki asur limkor dirot laravim vafil lo lahaskira dirot lemish enam yudim. You aren't allowed to sell or rent land to non-Jews, to Arabs, period. He took the hardest possible line you could take in this sugya. Right? And this created, obviously, an explosion. Right? So as I said before, there's three models you could take, right? There's the hard line, there's the pragmatic, and then there's the lechatchila. Shmuel Eliyahu Dimei took the hard line position. Right? Then there were two groups of poskim who responded. One group of poskim took the pragmatic approach and said, you're crazy. Right? That was what Reb Eliashiv said. Right? Reb Eliashiv in number 17 said, you're out of your mind. You are causing anti-Semitism. You're right. He said, "Agav kach ki piura tehom ideologit bein arim charedim le'rabanei hayamin." A gaping hole has been opened between the right-wing rabbis and the charedim, right? And you're going to cause hate. Now they responded to him. That's very nice. Except you said the same thing in Bnei Brak. You just didn't make it public. Okay, technical problem. Fine. But there were a group of Rabbanim, especially Haredi Rabbanim, who just came out and said, look, pragmatically you're wrong. They took basically the Herzog approach, which is, what are you talking about? It may be that there's, you know, there's some basis to that in halacha, but Bizman Hazeh, that's not what you can do, so just stop talking. There were another group of Rabbanim, though, who said, who came out on the Chachila approach. If you look, for example, in 18 and 19, Rav Drukman, Rav Tzvanya Drori, and Rav Yaakov Ariel came out and just and with a statement, I gave you one line of it, and said, Lo chein medina Yisrael, mechuyevet leitachez l'chol drachay, kishavei zechuyot, kisha azum meugenet gam b'tarat Yisrael, v'gam b'chukei medina. He said, no, the state of Israel has to treat its citizens as equal, and that is what the Torah says, and that's what the law says. Now, they didn't explain the basis for their statement, but they came out and they make it sound more lechatchila. The person who really came out very strongly was Mori Virabi Lichtenstein. I gave you the translation of his article in 19. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I gave it to you here in the English. You can look at it on your own time. He starts off by saying, to say the least, it must be asked whether this is a battle worth fighting. Aside from the judgment, the wisdom of it seems faulty as well. Indeed, almost the entire unfolding of events has resulted from the dissemination of this letter was foreseeable and, to a large extent, obvious. The public furor, both social and ideological, the rift that is opened among the citizens of the state, between camps and within camps, the op-eds in the various media outlets, the various positions, often impassioned and overheated, the attack on the religious Zionist rabbinate from the right and from the left, even from the Torah giants, it was all foreseeable. One reads it and wonders what happened to the wisdom of those who were enjoined to consider future ramifications. Or in Hebrew, right, what happened, lechochmat elu sheh? Lirodet ha-nolad. He said, first of all, pragmatically, I don't know what you're talking about. And then he says, right, the document speaks in the name of halacha, and its signatories see themselves as its envoys and propagators. But therein lies the problem. The prohibition of selling homes to Gentiles is presented as the exclusive halachic position in the matter at hand, and the voice that bursts forth from the throats of the signatories is made to sound like the single unequivocal word of God that is halacha. Here one asks, is that indeed so? So without a doubt, the position expressed in the letter is based on rabbinic sources and a long halachic tradition. Yet taken as a whole, the document leaves one with the impression that its conclusions are based on presumptions that characterize a particular but not exclusive halachic approach. This impression is generated in part by what the document states and no less by what the document it omits. And then he goes on to summarize it. So first, in C, he takes up the lechatchila positions of the Ravid and the Baliatosos to say these prohibitions only apply to idolaters. And not, or the Sheva Umos, or people who are not Gedur Megeder Adatot. Right? In D, he notes that this is based basically on the Rambam, but that didn't make it into Shulchan Aruch. So Rav Lichtenstein, right, responded both on the pragmatic level and the Lechatchila level. He said, first of all, there are poskim who militate against it. Second of all, right, even on Lechatchila level, there are poskim who think we should embrace people if they're not idolaters. So you see that same dynamic playing out. The hard lines, The B'dieved people, the pragmatists, and the people who are willing to even say maybe there is some value in the modern values, and maybe halacha, in fact, lechatchila also accords with this. Okay, we have 5 minutes left, so we're not going to be able to get into the last thing here, but I want to pull out one idea from it. I've said that basically whenever you deal with these types of modern, you know, conflicts between modern values, whether it be religious tolerance or whether it be, right, simply allowing non-Jews to live in the land or, right, you have three options. You can take the hard line and reject the modern value according to a strict read of halacha. You can be a pragmatist and not get into the question of whether it's okay or not okay that the modern values don't accord with the values of halacha and just say, but pragmatically it doesn't matter. Or you can find a way of explaining, like Rav Henkin did, with religious tolerance, or perhaps like Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Drukman and Rav Ariel and Rav Tzvanya Drori do, with non-Jews living in the land and owning land and renting land, find lechatchila ways of saying no. Halacha, to an extent, recognizes the same values as valuable, and there is ways of interpreting halacha, and we should go in that direction. There is, theoretically, a fourth model, which is not lechatchila, not b'dieved, and not pragmatic. Now, what is the fourth option, right? So you don't see it in this discussion, but there is a theoretical fourth option when you have a conflict between modern values and halacha, and that is to reinterpret the mitzius, reinterpret the reality such that the question just doesn't get off the ground, right? It's just to sidestep the whole question. Now, what do I mean? So you can, I won't read it inside. From 18 to 25, I deal with the other question. There's another Isser, as I said, which is the prohibition of allowing a non-Jew to be a leader, right? To be a king, which we then extend to leadership roles. So you get the same type of dispute, right? Rav Herzog says, well, you know, it's b'dieved, and we can justify it, and whatever. But there's another argument that both Rav Herzog and Rav Israeli make that seems to me a fourth model. And they say, look, that's true in a monarchy. In a democracy, leadership is not called leadership, it's called partnership. They say, why? Because even if you posken like the positions that non-Jews can't be leaders, that means a leader who gets power that can't be taken away from them, right? And is unilateral, but democratic positions of power, A, are temporary, B, are voted in, right? And C, are not, right, unilateral positions. And therefore, they say democratic leadership positions are simply what we call partnership. They're not leadership. They look like leadership. They're not leadership, right? And they say that across the board. They say that for, right, they say that mibchinat non-Jews, that has implications for leadership positions of women in democratic leadership, right? All of that is in that same discussion, in this, right, broad discussion of poskim. Now, again, we don't have time to get into the details. But I think that model is really model number four, right? Because so far we've seen three, right? We've seen hardliners, we've seen accommodationists, let's say, and we've seen lechatchila-esque people. The argument that halacha and modern reality just don't speak to the same mitziyut, right, seems to me to be a fourth model, which is sidestepping the whole question, which is saying, it's not even, right, the pragmatists say I don't have to ask the question because there's no choice. This model says I don't have to ask the question because what looks like halacha is applicable is not. We're just in a different world. And therefore, in this world, is it lechatchila to have non-Jews as leaders? Yeah, sure. Why not? You think there's a halacha category that we even have to contend with? No, there's not a halacha category I have to contend with. So I'm free to say it's lechatchila. I'm free to say it's b'dieved. I'm free to say whatever I want because halacha isn't even mityaches to this. Because this is simply a new reality. And sometimes poskim have that fourth option in hand, which is not, right, is just to walk away from the question, to sidestep it entirely, and reinterpret mitzvot in such a way that they free themselves to just say, this is a different reality, and now I can ask the question with no, right, preconceived notions of what halacha should say, does say, might say, because we're dealing in a different reality, which nidmeli is a different model, but again, to actually spell out the details is a bit too complicated, but that I think is the fourth potential model that poskim can use. And I think whether it be non-Jews being allowed in the land, owning land, renting land, leadership, voting, and all the issues we didn't get to, you'll see that recurring models like this will come up. And just the last point to note, which is important, is that some poskim are ikvi, right, consistent which type of model they use, other poskim obviously aren't. Some poskim will say about certain things it's lechatchila, the situation we're in, and other things b'dieved. Some people will always be pragmatists, right? But you could, in theory, mix and match based on a combination of your convictions about the values you're dealing with and your conviction of what the halachic sources are telling you and what you need to sidestep the problems. And it is time for Mark.